This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Catch a wave and you're sitting on top of the world.
It has some distinct advantages over solar and wind that, you know, power can be generated 24/7, 365 days a year. The waves never stop. And that's certainly attractive to utilities.
If you sit at the edge of the Pacific or Atlantic Ocean and watch as waves ferociously slap the sands, you can't help but recognize the awesome power of the ocean. As you sit there watching, do you ever think, it sure would be great if we could tap that energy? Well, it turns out we can. Today on Sea Change Radio, we're talking about wave energy, the processes, both scientific and political, by which wave motion is converted into electricity. I begin by talking with Dr. George Taylor, a pioneer in wave energy capture, who tells us about the progress his company, Ocean Power Technologies, has made to propagate buoy-based ocean power across the globe. Next, I speak with Ali Bagai, CEO of another wave energy company called Ocean Links. He tells us how oscillating water column technology works to capture wave energy. Finally, we hear from Todd Woody, environment editor for Forbes, who's covered the successes and challenges associated with this innovation of seemingly infinite sustainability. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Dr. George Taylor. He's the co-founder and executive vice chairman of Ocean Power Technologies. George, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
So you and your late colleague, Dr. Joseph Burns, came up with this vision for making waves into power. Why don't you describe a little bit about your power buoy technology?
We looked at different structures and different ways of converting the enormous amount of mechanical energy that's available in ocean waves, the best way to convert that into electricity. And we finished up after going several other routes, we finished up with a basic structure being a buoy-like structure. A buoy, by its very nature, bobs up and down on the wave. And we modified that basic buoy, which is usually a rather flat device, circular, into a two-component device, which we call a dual absorber. It consists of a long spar, which vertically floats in the ocean. Most of it is below the surface. And then near the top, we have a donut-shaped float. In other words, a circular float with a hole in it, and that hole is allows it to slide up and down on the spar. So as a wave comes along, the float moves up and down on the wave, whereas the spar remains relatively stable. And what we do is we convert that relative motion of the float to the spar into a direct drive shaft that feeds in, is coupled to the float and feeds down into the spar. So as that wave moves up and down, the drive shaft moves in and out of the spar. That's the simple explanation of how it works. There is also a very important component inside the spar, which is a control system and a computer. And the reason for that is to be able to automatically tune the system on a wave-by-wave basis. Waves are, by their very nature, quite random. They vary in both their height and also in their length or their period. And if you are able to tune it to the impedance of the generator, I'm getting rather technical here in terms of the electrical side of things, but if you're able to tune the system, then you'll get a maximum of transfer of the mechanical energy in the waves into electricity coming out of the generator.
And give us an idea of the efficiency of your power buoys in terms of energy conversion, and compare it maybe to wind or solar if you can.
Comparing it to wind and solar, there's more energy in waves than there is in wind, and there's more energy in wind than there is in solar. Now, they all originally come from solar energy. In other words, the heat of the sun heats the surface of the ocean, and that creates wind. And as the wind blows across the surface of the ocean, it interacts with the ocean and creates waves. And by the time a wave has moved hundreds of miles, it's getting bigger and bigger. So the ideal locations for us are where we have a long fetch of ocean without any islands to interfere with the flow of the waves. But getting to the question of how do we compare against wind and solar, we have this great advantage over both of them, that the energy is just much more concentrated in the waves than it is in the wind. And the wind in turn is more concentrated than the solar energy. So ultimately this will mean wave energy should be the most economic of these three renewable sources of energy.
Could you give us an idea of where your company has been implementing their power buoy technology, and give us an idea of your competitors?
Yeah. First of all, we have and are working in four different regions of the world. The United States, where the company is headquartered, also in the United Kingdom and Europe as a second area, and in Australia, and also in Japan. In Japan, we're partnering with Mitsui Shipbuilding and Engineering, and in the United States, we're partnering with Lockheed Martin. We have worked in, we put systems in the water in Scotland, in off the coast of Spain, where we've worked with Iberdrola, which is the largest utility in the world in terms of renewable energy. We put systems in the water off New Jersey. It's been a great test area, and we're currently building a wave power station off Reedsport in Oregon. We recently were awarded a very large grant of $66 million by the Australian government towards the building of a 19-megawatt wave power station on the Victorian coastline in the southeast of Australia.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Dr. George Taylor. He's the CEO of Ocean Power Technologies. George, maybe you can give us an overview of some of the company's history with its test projects. How have your power buoys fared in inclement weather, for example?
The company has had systems in the water since 1994, actually. So we've had much more ocean testing of our systems than any other wave energy company in the world. And of course, that you learn a lot when you put things in the ocean, because it is a tough environment. So we prove our systems can survive storms, even tsunamis, hurricanes. We recently had a system off New York, which was able, which was right in the path of Hurricane Irene at the beginning of this year. And the system operated correctly and survived without any problems. So that's very important.
So creating a little farm of these buoys, how large can it scale to?
Oh, it can scale. We believe that within, let's say, 3 or 4 years, there will be wave farms, and we hope to be the continue to be one of the leaders in the business, where we would be building wave farms that would be hundreds of megawatts in size.
And how long do these installations take?
How long do they take to build?
Yes.
When you build a conventional power station, and of course particularly a nuclear power station, you're dealing with lots of environmental issues and lots of safety issues and so on. In our case, and also you're building a very large system. In other words, you've got to build You don't build them in many small units. You have to build one or two very large units, and that's why it takes a long time. In the case of a modular system, which is what ours is, and what wind is, and what solar is also, if you've got a modular system, you can very quickly gear up to volume production, because you're not limited to using one supplier to build the buoys, the steel structures. We don't plan to build the steel structures, hence our partnering with Mitsui is based on the idea that they're well skilled to do steel fabrication. They know how to manufacture large quantities of things like ships. So buoys are very small compared to ships. And if for example we need very large numbers, you would have used multiple steel fabricators. You don't have to do everything at the one time. You can do them all in parallel, if you follow me.
Why don't you explain some of the environmental issues that you've encountered? And also, you mentioned ships. I was wondering if, in terms of handling shipping lanes and other issues.
Okay. On the environmental issues, we are the first company to have obtained a finding of no significant impact. That's called a FONSI, and is the highest level in the United States of environmental permitting. In other words, there is no potential problem. So when we began working with the U.S. Navy in Hawaii at the Marine base, and Hawaii, of course, being a very environmentally conscious area, we went through a very extensive environmental permitting process, which involved considering all types of marine life, from whales down to algae, and it was agreed by the experts in those marine fauna areas that there would be no adverse effect. Also, we dealt with the local people who live around. Would they be upset by these buoys, which are typically at least a mile offshore, often more on an average 2 to 3 miles offshore to get to the depth of water that is ideal for us? At that distance out, you can barely see these units because most of the structure is below the surface. So we went through the process of the all the people who could be, all the stakeholders that could be concerned, the surfers, local people, the fishermen, and we, as I say, we were approved at the highest level.
The co-founder of Ocean Power Technologies, Dr. George Taylor. George, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Oh, you're welcome, Alex.
Rock me on the water, sister, will you soothe my fevered brow? Oh, rock me on the water, I'll get down to the sea somehow.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Ali Bagai. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Ocean Links. It's a wave energy company based in Sydney, Australia. Ali, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the opportunity, Alex.
Well, we're excited to learn more about ocean energy and Ocean Links' unique solution. Why don't you give us quickly an overview of what Ocean Links does?
Yes, thank you. Ocean Links has been around for 15 years. We are a wave technology company and an emerging technology company, and we have been developing our technology and devices for the past 15 years, focusing on applications in near shore and offshore for deep and shallow waters. Our technology basically is based on oscillating water column, where we capture the energy from the swells of the sea and transform that into electrical energy through a variable pitch turbine. We do hold 28 international patents, and about 18 of them, 17 or 18 of them are granted internationally, and another 11 are going through the processes. And probably we are one of the few in the world in this sector who has got the full end-to-end spectrum of the technology for, wave energy conversion devices.
Well, why don't you walk us through, in layman's terms, how your technology takes waves and allows us to plug in a toaster oven?
Sure. Basically, if you could imagine a column in a shape of an L-shaped box is submerged underwater, what happens on top of that column sits a turbine, and that turbine in turn is connected to generator. And that generator then is connected to, if like in simple term, through a subsea cable to the local grid and its distribution network. When the swells rise or fall, they enter that column, which is underwater, and the level of water inside that column is mathematically designed to be amplified, thereby increasing the amount of energy captured from ocean by several folds, and compressing the air above that chamber, which would be at pushed at high velocity and volume through the turbine. And the turbine, which is an air turbine, would be whizzing around, and in turning around, it will be turning the generator, and generator will be producing electricity, which will be transmitted to shore via that subsea cable. When the wave falls, in that chamber, the level of water falls, thereby sucking the air from atmosphere through the turbine and pushing the turbine again to spin. But of course, because the direction of flow is changing, the blade of turbine also changes angle to accommodate that change of direction. Hence, the turbine will always rotate in same, clockwise direction.
And give us an idea of the current landscape or oceanscape for Ocean Links's projects in terms of what you're producing now and what you, in the short term, are projecting to begin producing in terms of kilowatts and or megawatts.
Ocean Links has been one of the few, if not the only one that I know to best of my knowledge today I'm speaking to you, who has actually tested three large devices over past 15 years in real open ocean environment. And we have gathered a lot of data and information, and we, of course, have learned a lot through that 15 years of the process. Our device is one of the most efficient devices in ocean energy, if you like, in particular in wave energy sector. For a small footprint of 20 meter by 20 meter, that this device can produce in excess of 1 megawatt of energy on average. And the device basically is called GreenWave in terms of, if you like, the trademark. And that sits under its own weight on the bottom of the ocean at 10 meter to 15 meter water depth and generates electricity of approximately, say, in a place like south of Australia, about 3 gigawatt hours per annum. That's a lot of electricity. And what it means it could feed probably 3 to 500 homes with the electricity. And that takes only a footprint of 20 meter by 20 meter. In terms of projected, projections for the projects, we do anticipate to have one of these projects in South Australia by end of next year, fully grid connected, where we will be showcasing the device globally, and hopefully we will be pioneering and leading the way forward in ocean energy, and if you like, setting the example and standards. After that, in parallel to it, we would be developing projects in Portugal, Spain, Mexico, Hawaii, and rest of the world.
Ali Bagai, he's the CEO of Ocean Links. It's a wave energy company based in Sydney, Australia. Ali, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today on Sea Change Radio.
A pleasure is mine. Thank you very much.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Todd Woody. He's the environment editor for Forbes, Forbes.com. People can follow him at Green Wombat on Twitter. Todd, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
You penned a piece for Forbes in February about ocean power. Why don't you give us a little bit of a background on some of the companies that you think are most formidable in this race to compete with other renewables?
Despite some of these companies been around for a while, it's still early days as far as actually deploying this technology. So it's really hard to say if there's any leading company, but certainly Ocean Power Technologies has been around for some 20 years. And it's still sticking to it. Newer company is Columbia Technologies up in Oregon, who they think they have some next generation technology to sort of leapfrog the other companies.
As you were researching this piece, did you find yourself scratching your head wondering why this hasn't taken off earlier, like solar panels?
I did, because especially about 4 or 5 years ago, there was somewhat of a gold rush to secure offshore spots to do a lot of wave power testing. PG&E, the big California utility, had signed a contract to buy wave energy, which was later scuttled by state regulators because they said the technology was too early. So despite all this activity, I wondered why nothing's really come to fruition yet.
What kind of conclusions did you reach?
Basically, this is really tough stuff. You're talking about huge machines, complicated machines that have to withstand some pretty treacherous ocean conditions. And I think a lot of the companies underestimated just how tough it would be to build something that could survive out in the ocean. And so in recent years, there's just been a lot of refinement of the technology. And of course, the global financial crisis did not help. A lot of the companies, you know, had a hard time raising money.
Yeah, it seems like there's a pretty wide spectrum of the technology, from smaller buoy-based systems to these larger, almost oil rig-like structures. Do you sense one or the other winning out, or do you think that the two opposite ends of the spectrum are compatible in terms of coming up with energy solutions from the ocean?
Yeah, I think it's too early to say if there's any one technology or one out, but I certainly think there's room for all kinds of different technologies, you know. I think it all depends on, you know, we're still in the prototype stage. If one company's technology works really well and grabs market share, but I think it's going to be somewhat like solar energy. You've got solar thermal power plants, you've got solar panels. There's just going to be room for all kinds of different technologies because the demand will be so high.
in this country, are there any federal funds that are going in part of the clean energy bills that are being passed or at least discussed? Is ocean power a component of this?
It's sort of below the radar. I have not seen any specific funding for this type of technology, though it may be within the budgets of the Department of Energy. One of the companies I've written about, Columbia Power Technologies, so far has mainly received federal funding, but we're talking relatively small grants, you know, the $5-6 million type of range, rather than these, you know, the huge multi-billion dollar loan guarantees that some solar and wind projects received.
I'm talking to Todd Woody. He's the environment editor for Forbes. Todd, do you think that ocean power technology can, how deep into the country can it serve in terms of power lines? Can they go into through California to Nevada, for example?
That would just all depend on the transmission infrastructure. But I think, you know, the thinking is there's such concentrations of populations in the United States, at least along the coast, that, you know, there's more than enough demand just in the coastal areas of California and on the East Coast.
When you were researching this piece, did you come across any barriers that the industry is facing in terms of, similar to the Cape Wind project, where people are worried about their sight lines, or in terms of shipping lanes, et cetera, environmental issues?
That's certainly something on the company's minds, because one of these pilot projects that was supposed to be deployed off Humboldt County in California and Mendocino County were more or less scuttled because of local opposition from surfers, from fisher people, who worried that these things would interfere with their pursuits. So, you know, I talked to the executives of these companies, they are certainly aware of that. But there's so few projects out there right now and no big deployments that I think it's an issue that really hasn't come to the forefront, though it certainly could.
And in this country, it's really quite an early stage technology. Are there any countries that have embraced ocean power technology more fully in terms of funding and stimulating entrepreneurship in the sector?
Certainly Scotland and the UK in general. Is the leading place for this technology as far as they've provided funding and granted offshore leases or at least space for them to test out the technology. Portugal was also the hotspot for wave energy, at least for the prototype stage, but that seems to have gone by the wayside given the financial crisis in that country.
Now, let's talk about the technology for a second in gentler waters like the Mediterranean Sea or the Caspian Sea. Some of these other areas, are those prime places for wave power to take hold, or is it more in the Atlantic and the Pacific and more choppy waters?
You do need consistent waves to make it worthwhile. I just think there's, you know, this whole area has been untapped, that the focus is going to be on the best wave resource, which is, you know, the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans.
Do you see a time where ocean power technology will be competing with wind, solar, geothermal, or do you think that this is just an interesting little niche, but not something that's going to blossom to the extent of solar and wind?
I think it certainly could be competitive. I think it's going to be longer than people had anticipated because both the technological hurdles and then also just the pure funding. It's really hard to get funding right now. It has some distinct advantages over solar and wind that, you know, power can be generated 24/7, 365 days a year. The waves never stop. And that's certainly attractive to utilities. It's more like geothermal that it's around the clock source of energy. But I think what we have to see over the next few years, hopefully you're going to see some larger prototypes get tested. Then once that proof is out there, then that's probably going to attract more financing.
Todd Woody, the environmental editor for Forbes, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by The Beach Boys, McCoy Tyner, Jackson Brown, and more Chiba.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.